Welcome to Severance by Andy Evans. Chapter 2. The Gathering Storm. The moon hung high in the sky over Severance. Cassius sat in a rocking chair on his porch, smoking his pipe. There was a gentle breeze, but the air was heavy. There could be a storm coming, Cassius thought to himself. He took a long, languid draw on the pipe. He blew a smoke ring into the night sky, and then stood up. He walked to the edge of the porch. Yep, there is a storm coming, he thought to himself. Inside the house, Isabel was sewing a pattern to place in a frame on the wall. Cassius entered the room. There's a storm coming, I can feel it in my bones. The pressure builds, I can just feel it.
Well, we should close up the hatches around the house so that we don't get any of the dust blowing in through here again. I can't cope if it gets in here.
If you take the basement and the first floor, I'll go upstairs and shut the hatches up there. No sense in tempting fate. Better to shut up unnecessarily than to be found wanting. That stuff can be the devil to shift. It'll take the paint right off the walls if it gets in here.
Should I bring your rocking chair in?
Seems a mighty fine idea, Izzy. I don't want to be sitting on any of that stuff after the storm. It eats away at your underwear if you let it.
They each turned to the task at hand, preparing their home against the dust storms for which Severance was known. As always, discretion seemed the better part of valor to the two. The evening meal was quietly bubbling in the pans on the stove when the principal sound was that of the hatches being battened down ready for the storm, which may or may not arrive. But Isabel knew to trust her grandfather's intuition. He was rarely wrong in such matters. Isabel remembered how her grandfather had been one of the few folks to predict the dust storm that ruined Severance's harvest a few years ago. He decided to gather in what he could before the storm broke, storing the produce carefully to ensure that their family unit of two had adequate food to get by, and maybe then some too. Others lost their entire harvest and were forced to rely on the kindness of neighbors on this moon. Cassius had been reluctant at first to share the provisions stored because he'd stored them for he and Isabel, but she plagued him to be kind and to let her take some goods into town for the food drive. The sacks of grain and corn that she dragged into town on her little hand wagon were enough to keep some of the families of Severance going through that winter. But he wouldn't allow anyone to come to their homestead to obtain food, or to present their thanks after surviving such an unforgiving time in this moon's history. And Blue Sun? They were nowhere to be seen. When they sold the land to the cooperative, they washed their hands of the whole sector. If the moon starved and everyone died, it wasn't Blue Sun's fault. They owed Severance nothing. But the townsfolk remembered the prudence of Cassius and the apparent willingness to share what little he had. He was a well-liked and respected figure shrouded in anonymity. But if he was prepared to play his part, then Severance would honor his unique desire for solitude. Back in the town, life continued unabated. No one was aware of the impending storm. The early warning systems would still be a while before they came into play. No one could afford to repeat the mistakes of the last major storm, but storms come and go on Severance. Sometimes they last 5 minutes, but at their worst they can last several weeks, with the effect of the dust damaging everything it's thrown against. Buildings, crops, animals, you name it can get stripped bare. It had been known to strip the flesh off dead cattle, such was the force of the wind driving the dust. So the people of Severance thanked their lucky stars that such storms were rare. But even a mild storm caused enough disruption to the daily routine. As it was, they had no worries this evening. There were men and women in the saloon enjoying their freedom to relax from their daily chores when the transport shuttle landed at the main space dock on this moon. The passengers were much like any other newcomers to Severance. They carried a hope in their hearts that if they worked hard and followed their rules, that they could buy land and become part of this idealistic cooperative, relatively free from the watchful eye of the Alliance, and more importantly, free of the ubiquitous Blue Sun Corporation. As the family stepped down from the ramp onto the landing bay floor, it was obvious that people understood exactly what the deal was, and exactly what they would be signing up for. Of course, they weren't all farmers. There were others, too, who brought their unique skills to bear on this little community, such as engineers, architects, medical practitioners, even mechanics. Although nobody had yet introduced anything more technical than the spaceships and the Hummer mules to Severance. There was little point. They didn't have the fuel and they lacked the means of replacing busted parts. Nope, a horse and buggy was far more trustworthy and far more reliable. Parts were plentiful for buggies because they were made right here in situ. The engineers came to make a living purely from keeping the freighters flying, allowing the produce of Severance to be delivered to Halston unhindered. As the luggage was unloading, one new arrival paid particular attention to how his property was to be handled. Amos Abercrombie was a recent graduate in computer sciences who'd trained on Osiris studying at the university. He was a young and idealistic man. He wanted to do something to help to develop the outer planets, so he volunteered to join a work program on Severance to deliver a connection to the Cortex that would allow the inhabitants to expand their trade through the system far beyond Halston. And in his possession were several extremely valuable pieces of equipment loaned to him by the university in exchange for the right to publish his findings on the difficulties of preparing the outer rim for greater contact with the wider verse. As Abercrombie steered the baggage handlers carefully towards the exit, the FitzAlan family stepped down from the shuttle. Daniel and Martha and their son Jacob looked wide-eyed at their new home. They'd signed up for a year here on Severance and were looking to settle eventually. Daniel was a fit-looking 35-year-old, and his wife Martha 2 years his junior and striking in her appearance with long brunette hair and the darkest brown eyes. Jacob had clearly inherited the best genes from both parents and was a stunning little boy with eyes like deep dark pools and a shaggy mop of hair. At 7 years old, he was already a heartbreaker. The FitzAlans were going to prove valuable to this moon. Daniel was good with his hands and Martha was a schoolteacher. Jacob? Well, no one expects a 7-year-old to have to make a noteworthy contribution to life on a border moon. The only other significant arrival was a tall, thin man in a dark suit. He'd kept himself to himself the entire journey, simply using a small view screen to send waves back and forth across the black, until the signal and reception began to fade. He was careful to shield the content of his transmissions from the other passengers, and when Jacob asked him if he had any games on his handheld, he merely stared a cold, icy stare that caused Daniel to take his son's hand and draw him back to sit on his lap. Something about this man set the alarm bells ringing. His frosty demeanor, his pallid complexion, both offset by hollow eyes that seemed recessed in their sockets and underscored by highly pronounced cheekbones. Daniel wondered if the thinning hair was dyed, as it looked far too dark to be natural. Yes, indeed, something about this mysterious passenger made Daniel uneasy. Martha merely wondered if the passenger had realized the sort of destination Severance would provide. The high-quality suit, she always noticed quality, was not really designed for life in a farming community and marked the stranger out from the outset. The luggage was loaded onto the horse and wagon, and the passengers were carried in a slightly more luxurious version of the same. Their initial destination was the town hall for their inaugural welcome by the town mayor, who would run through some of the rules and some of the regulations associated with life here on Severance. By being absolutely clear with the new settlers, the lawmen of Severance found time to hunt and fish. It was an easy life. There was even half-day closing every Wednesday at the sheriff's office in town. Mostly, they just concerned themselves with applications to relocate to Severance rather than any real trouble. Today was not a half-day, though. Today, the sheriff and his staff would be filling in relevant documentation on the new arrivals and taking pictures for their citizens' cards, which allowed them to prove they were legitimate guests here. All would be welcomed, each given a chance at a new life, and past indiscretions could be left behind. As long as they were all willing to serve the common cause, they could settle and grow old here. But it was far from obvious to Sheriff Johansson that a problem had arrived with the latest group of settlers, and that life on Severance was about to change forever. You've been listening to Severance by Andy Evans. Listen in again for Chapter 3, coming soon. The music featured in this podcast was provided free of charge by Magnatunes.com under a Creative Commons license. You heard the following tracks: La Crabe Noire by Shira Kamen, Landscape by Claire Fitch, Hand to Dross by Shira Kamen, and Ambient Cellist again by Claire Fitch. And we would like to thank our friends at magnatunes.com for granting us permission to use their music in this podcast.